Welcome into a special Husker Max today as we are on the eve of the NCAA softball tournament across the country, mostly in the Southeast Conference. If you're looking for sites, that's its own conversation. But heading down to one of those SEC sites is our very good friend and voice of Nebraska softball, Nate Rohr, who will be heading down to Baton Rouge. Nate, how are you doing this morning? How excited are you for the postseason to be here in full swing?
Doing just fine. We're actually down here in Baton Rouge right now. The Huskers have a workout scheduled at Tiger Park here later this morning, early afternoon. And so I'm doing well and excited to get into this NCAA tournament.
So let's, before we look at this regional and the NCAA tournament, let's look back at the last week, because it has been a news-filled last week when you look at the Big Ten tournament. But I want to begin with the honors. Jordy Ball being named a top 10 finalist for National Player of the Year, third time in her career doing that. She was also named the Big Ten Softball Player and Pitcher of the Year, the first player ever to receive both honors in the same season, as well as being first team All Big Ten along with Ava Kuzak. And then you've got a couple of second teamers in Samantha Bland and Hannah Kamenzind, and you've got Bland also on the all defensive team. What, as you have followed this team throughout this season, to see those four get those honors and high honors as well, with an expanded Big Ten conference that brought in a couple of pretty good programs as well?
Yeah, I'm very happy that Jordy Ball got both Pitcher and Player of the Year, because I think, what she is doing is unique in that she is pitching at such a high level and she's hitting at such a high level at the exact same time. And that's to say nothing of the defense with which she's playing the outfield, which for the most part's been really good, or first base, where she's been very good. But I was a little worried going into last week that the fact that Jordy's numbers were really, really good, but not the absolute best hitting wise, would cost her player of the year, which very often becomes more or less a hitter of the year award. and because her numbers weren't perfect from a pitching standpoint, it would cost her pitcher of the year. Lindsey Grine of Oregon was probably her top competition on pitcher of the year, and she had a bumpy last series against Michigan State, so that kind of opened the door for her. And I do think the coaches recognized that what Jordy Ball is doing is unprecedented, being so dominant on both sides, being so dominant as an outfielder and a hitter and a base runner and a pitcher. The fact that she is just dominating at all levels was unprecedented and deserved unprecedented levels of honor. And so the fact that she got both player and pitcher of the year in the same year, it speaks to that. And I'm happy that the coaches recognized that it needed to be honored that way, that, you shouldn't sit there and sort of parse out, well, maybe she's player, maybe she's pitcher, I'll give her one, but not the other. Sometimes all conference teams, there are very, very nasty politics involved. I'm not going to vote for your kid because it'll help my kid and that sort of thing. And so I'm happy that did not come into play this year. And Jordy got her just desserts, because what she's doing is unprecedented. I was happy to see Ava Kuzak as a first-team all-conference player. I mean, she's hit as well as anybody in the country other than Jordy Ball, So she's had a great year. I was happy Hannah Kamenzind got some love. Samantha Bland's a nice story at third base in that, here's somebody. Now, she played infield growing up, and she played infield through high school. But Nebraska put her in the outfield last year to get her time, just get her playing. Uh-huh. And so she had to convert back to the infield. And I think that held her back for a while. I think she was working through that, adjusting to the increased workload defensively. And it took her some time, but she put in the work, worked really hard, and has been able to settle in at third base. And the fact that she's all defensive team tells you that she's settled in at third base, and then the bats come along with it. So very happy for those kids, very deserving. About the only snub, you could say, and I'm putting quotation marks around it, would be Olivia DiNardo. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the fact that she's only hit this year, she's hit well, but maybe not for as much power as you might have hoped. That's probably why she didn't get all conference recognition. But that's about the only one where you can make a case. I can live with her being left off of the all-conference teams, in part because of how right they got it with Jordan.
That's a lot. That's a number of individuals as a team, all kinds of records this mm-hmm. season, especially with the long ball, especially with, and this is what I enjoyed getting to partake in as I took my daughter to the ballpark bash. She got the face paint. We got the balloon. She got to throw stuff at the inflatables. It was a spin the prize wheel, all of that. But then to look at who was all out there at Bolin and how packed that place was for a single game record and then for a weekend series record, this has been a special year, even without hosting a regional, Nate.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think people want to get behind this team. The fact that this starting lineup is very strongly in-state players. I mean, the best player on the roster is an Omaha girl or a Papillion girl, if we're being specific. But you have Omaha and Valley and Elkhorn and Lincoln. The fact that this has such an in-state flavor to it, I think helps. But I think the biggest thing is that here you have an in-state player who's the face of college softball and able this year to do her thing, and she's done it at an incredible level. So it's been amazing to see Bolin Stadium full. You know, you think of a lot of these Big Ten stadiums, and a lot of them aren't very big anyway, but very few of them ever get full. Mm-hmm. You know, the weather's never great. You know, there's not great fan interest in some places. So it's usually a fight to fill up a Big Ten softball stadium the way some of these SEC facilities are. So to have SEC-looking crowds in the Big Ten, I think it's really notable and really exciting, and I think speaks well to what Nebraska softball is and what it's been this year.
And it looked like a decent number of folks made the trip to West Lafayette for the conference mm-hmm. tournament last week. Huskers make the semifinals for several years in a row. Haven't made it past there since winning the whole darn thing a few years ago. Just assessing Nebraska's run in the tournament, gets a win, but then falls to UCLA in a game that it took Nebraska quite a while to figure out. Terry, what do you think that was more just Terry threw her best game of her collegiate career, or is there something more about Nebraska and lefties in the postseason that maybe might be worrying heading into the regional?
I think Terry threw pretty well. We'll start there. I thought she was changing speed. She had her hitters crossed up. She's also the best pitcher Nebraska had faced in 6 weeks, and maybe longer. So, you know, Nebraska, there are good pitchers out there at Northwestern and Washington, but nobody to Terry's quality. So it's just tough to deal with a pitcher that good when you've been facing routinely pitchers that are a step behind that. Mm-hmm. And so Nebraska had difficulty adjusting. She threw well. UCLA was able to put some pressure on Nebraska by scoring runs. So it's nothing that really concerns me long term. It is something that you hope they're able to adjust to, especially into this regional and facing LSU. Not to get ahead of ourselves, UConn's first on the menu, but you know, LSU has pitchers of vaguely that quality, and you're hopeful that seeing that sort of pitcher last Friday will help them if they were to face LSU, as we all hope they do on Saturday.
Yeah, let's take a look at that regional down there in Baton Rouge, opening up against UConn, 2 o'clock tomorrow. Of course, we say to listen. I'm sure that we can find a way to sync up ESPN Plus and the Huskers Radio Network call, because that way it is the most fun. I love whenever the Big Ten Plus production is just synced up to the radio call, because like I heard you say this last weekend, the real talent lives on radio.
Yeah, but that's
Huskers,
right.
Huskers, you know. Huskers and Huskies to open it up. What do we know about UConn, who hasn't been in the tournament in a hot minute?
Yeah, so really good offense, surprisingly good RPI. I mean, most Big East teams are in the hundreds in RPI, and they ended up in the upper 60s, which, you know, still isn't great, but does speak to them challenging themselves from a schedule standpoint and giving teams some trouble. I know Rhonda Revelle talked with Karen Weekly, Tennessee's coach, and Tennessee played UConn and had trouble with them. Ended up beating them, but had trouble with them. And Weekly kind of underscored to Rhonda, hey, this UConn bunch is for real. Great offense. It's led by their catcher, and her name is Grace Jenkins. Took me a minute there. I better learn it before tomorrow.
You've got Grace, 24 hours.
Yeah, exactly. But she's having just a video game numbers type of year. 21 home runs, 68 RBI, 425 average, slugging 916. She's the engine that makes that offense go, and is a real threat in that lineup. And so Nebraska's going to have to control her. And I mean, the rest of the lineup's pretty good. UConn averages 7+ runs a game. So it'll be a game where you hope it doesn't turn into a scoring derby, a hit fest. If you're able to keep UConn's offense down, I think Nebraska's got a good chance. That's going to require pitching it pretty well, because I think this UConn lineup is a little better than you might have thought just kind of seeing the name pop up on the bracket on Sunday.
UConn won the Big East title 18-4 over Creighton in that championship game. They are 35-17 on the season. On the other side of the bracket, you've got LSU at 41-14, Southeastern Louisiana 48-14. Start out with the Cowgirls, who won their second straight Southland Conference tournament title, and they'll have to take on the host in LSU to open things up following Nebraska UConn.
So Southeastern Louisiana, and they're actually, and I hate to correct you, the Lions, the Lady Lions.
Oh, yep. I think I pulled up Southeast Louisiana when I wrote that one out. Yep.
Always unfortunate to get your directional schools crossed up.
The Bayou directionals.
Yeah. You know, another good offensive team, team that pitched it pretty well this year also. The one thing that scares me about them is how they run the bases. They are one of the best base stealing teams in all of college softball. And so if you walk their hitters, and Kylie McGee has been prone to this year, and even, you know, Jordy Ball's walk numbers aren't exorbitant, but when she's gotten herself into trouble, it's because she walks people. Well, with these guys, if you walk them very often, it in effect turns into a double, where all they need to do is get one hit to score the run. So from that standpoint, I worry about the matchup with Southeastern Louisiana on that front, especially depending upon who Nebraska throws. And, you know, the perception would be that you throw Jordy Ball until either you win the regional or her right arm detaches from her body. But, you know, I would think at some point we see Kylie McGee, we see Hannah Cammons, and but against a Southeastern Louisiana, you have to throw strikes. So you'd be less thrown, you'd be less prone to put McGee in there because of that patience at the plate that could really come back and hurt you. So, you're hopeful that you can, to be honest, you hope you don't see Southeastern Louisiana in the elimination bracket. If they happen to pull the upset against LSU, that's one thing. But if you're sitting there looking at having to play four games in just over a day, and you're trying to parse out how do we throw Jordy Ball, you don't want to see the Southeastern Louisiana team that steals bases like crazy.
Right. And now how about for the host Tigers, number 10 national seed down there in Baton Rouge?
Well, another good offense, another very patient lineup, which scares you a little bit. The pitching is as good as it usually is. I mean, they just always seem to crank out good pitchers. But this is also a team that finished ninth in the SEC, so it's not like you're looking at them like a giant colossus. They're good. Let's not get that twisted. And they've been very good at home, 30-4 at home. And first off, wouldn't Nebraska kill to have 34 home games?
Oh, geez.
You know, the whole picture would be different. We'd be eating filet mignon for breakfast. If we were drawing 3,000 people a game and we did it for 34 games, it'd be about like volleyball. But
which, by the way, Nebraska played 16 home games.
Okay. Yeah. That's
the number that you're looking at, the difference, 34-16.
Yeah. That's a bit of a difference. And especially you think about it this time of year and the conditions that we're going to see, it's going to be 90s and humid down here. And, though Nebraska has chartered more this year than any year that I've covered the team, and I've covered them since 2004, you know, travel adds up on you a little bit. So the fact that LSU is at home, the fact that they may have more gas in their tank right now, that'll smooth their path a little bit and extend those numbers. But two decent pitchers, a patient lineup, but nobody that really just knocks your socks off, makes you afraid the way Jenkins does. But let's not get it twisted. A really big challenge, especially in their home building where they've won a ton of games.
When you evaluate this regional, and Nebraska hasn't made it out of a regional in a while, but when you look at it, when you look at this draw, it's been over a decade. Where does this rank? Does this rank as a pretty good draw for Nebraska to get LSU, to head down to Baton Rouge and obviously UConn and Southeastern Louisiana? Like there's not really slouches. You're in the postseason, but for the draw the Huskers get, how do you evaluate that?
Yeah, I do think it's one of the more favorable draws we've seen. I mean, I'm thinking back on the Stillwater regionals the last couple of years, and though Wichita State was from the American Athletic Conference, mm-hmm. There are tiers to the conferences other than the Power Four, the Autonomy Four, what have you, and the American is toward the top of that list. And frankly, the Big East is toward the bottom of that list. So the three seed that Nebraska drew was pretty favorable. Southeastern Louisiana worries me a little more because they do one thing well. I don't know if you looked at them top to bottom, front to back, how they stack up with the rest of the regional field, but if you start walking them, it starts to get ugly. So they do one thing really, really well. They may be a little tougher four than you're used to, but I think the fact that you're giving some with the three with UConn would suggest that this is a little easier regional to navigate than Nebraska's seen. I mean, for instance, Caleb, the last time the Huskers were down here in Baton Rouge, 2015, so literally a decade ago. I mean, that was the made-for-TV regional where LSU was the top seed, Arizona State was the two, Nebraska was the three, and then I think the four was McNeese State or somebody like that. But the
point Arizona is, State.
Well, Arizona State was the two.
And then Texas Southern was
there
on the
go. Outside. Southern was the four. But when you're talking about three major conference schools in the same regional, that's pretty arduous. That's tough because you're sitting there, and as you try to navigate the regional, you're thinking on Saturday, well, how are we going to beat a really, really good team with our season on the line, while also being mindful of the fact that we've got to play two games on Sunday if you lose that game on Saturday to LSU. So this is a little bit, that's the long-winded way of saying this is a little better draw to be quite frank, than Nebraska's gotten recently.
No, I'm looking forward to it. There's something about taking on these SEC teams, these big time programs, the programs that you see their names a lot, the LSUs, and you know, the seven seed in the potentially in the Supers is out of Knoxville. Yeah. So you know, there's a lot of interconnectedness in all of the history, and yeah, a lot of this for me goes back to what are the names and the brands that you see with football, but for softball, these are the brands, and Nebraska is up there with them.
Yep, no doubt about it. I mean, LSU and Tennessee, you talk about Tennessee, you're talking about a team that is a fixture in the Women's College World Series and a team Nebraska has already beaten this year. Now they beat them once. Could they beat them best of three? We don't know. But yeah, this is Nebraska's chance to show that it stacks up. I mean, the way the NCAA field came out with 14 teams out of the SEC, this is a referendum on the Southeastern Conference in terms of softball. And if all 14 get through a regional, not everybody's a national seed, but seven of them are of the top eight national seeds. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's the chance for the rest of the softball world to measure themselves against the Southeastern Conference, because clearly the presumption is that the SEC is the conference in college softball, and most of that is earned. But, you know, the marginal cases, the questions, you know, how much benefit of the doubt should they get? I mean, you think of a team like Missouri. Missouri ended up 5 games under 500. If they had somehow gotten back to just 500, they would get in the NCAA tournament. Yeah. So this is the chance for schools from the Big Ten, from the ACC, to see what they can do on this biggest stage against a conference that's pretty sure that it's the end-all, be-all of college softball right now.
And it's not 14, but I believe the Big Ten got 8 into the postseason. So there's a good number there. You look at the total of it, and it's a little bit the same thing you saw in like the NCAA basketball tournaments. The SEC and the Big Ten, they're dominating in how many bids that they get. And for the Big Ten, it's a chance to, although there's a couple of newbies coming in that you brought in from the West Coast that are here. But like you said, it's a big chance for Nebraska to go prove themselves and for the rest of the country to prove themselves against the SEC and the way the committee gauged that conference is. Nate, I appreciate every minute of you hanging out with us from Baton Rouge. Looking forward to listening to you. 2:00 Huskers Radio Network Friday for that first game against UConn, and then following throughout this regional, and then hopefully talking again next week about what that super is going to look like. I appreciate it, Nate.
Hey, thanks for having me, Caleb, and hopefully we're talking again next week.